Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna.
我听说应该慢慢的说。I've been asked to speak slowly so that the Chinese devotees can understand the translation. The translation can follow. Hare Krishna. This is Canto 4, Chapter 7. It's verse 6, right? Okay. Maitreya Vacha Tada Sarvani Bhutani Shutva Midushtamoditam Paritushtatma Bhistata Sadhu Sadvityata Bhruvan Maitreya Uvacha Tada Sarvani Bhutani Shutva Midushtamoditam Paritushtatma Bhistata Sadhu Sadvitata Bhruvan. Please chant. Maitreya Vacha Tada Sarvani Bhutani Shutva Midushtamoditam Paritusht Atma Bhistata Sadhu Sadvityata Bhruvan. Maitreya Vacha Tada Sarvani Bhutani Shutva Midushtamoditam Paritushtatma Bhistata Sadhu Sadvit Tata Bhruvan Maitreya Uvacha Tada Sarvani Bhutani Shutva Midushtamoditam Paritushtatma Bhistata Sadhu Sadvit Tata Bhruvan Maitreya Vacha Tada Sarvani Bhutani Shutva Midushtamoditam Paritushtatma Bhistata Sadvityata Bhruvan Maitreya. The sage Maitreya Uvacha said, Tada, at that time, Sarvani, all Bhutani, personalities, Shrutva, after hearing Midhuktama, the best of the benedictors, Lord Shiva, uditam, spoken by, paritushta, being satisfied, atmabihi, by heart and soul, tata, my dear Vidura, sadhu, sadhu, well done. Iti, thus, atta abruvan, as we have said. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The great sage Maitreya said, my dear Vidura, all the personalities present were very much satisfied in heart and soul upon hearing the words of Lord Shiva, who is the best among the benedictors. Purport. In this verse, Lord Shiva is described as Midhushtama, the best of the benedictors. He is known as Ashutosha, which indicates that he is very quickly satisfied and very quickly angered. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that less intelligent persons go to the demigods for material benedictions. In this connection, people generally go to Lord Shiva, and because he is always quickly satisfied and gives benediction to his devotees without consideration, he is called Midhushtama, or the best of the benedictors. Materialistic persons are always anxious to get material profit, but they are not serious about spiritual profit. Sometimes, of course, it so happens that Lord Shiva becomes the best benedictor in spiritual life. It is said that once a poor Brahmin worshipped Lord Shiva for a benediction. And Lord Shiva advised the devotee to go see Sanatana Goswami. The devotee went to Sanatana Goswami and informed him that Lord Shiva had advised him to seek out the best benediction from him, Sanatana. Sanatana had a touchstone with him, which he kept in the garbage. On the request of the poor Brahmin, Sanatana Goswami gave him the touchstone. And the Brahmin was very happy to have it. He could now get as much gold as he desired simply by touching the touchstone to iron. But after he left Sanatan, he thought, if a touchstone is the best benediction, why has Sanatan kept it with the garbage? He therefore returned and asked Sanatan Goswami, sir, if this is the best benediction, why do you keep it with the garbage? Sanatana Goswami then informed him, actually, this is not the best benediction. But are you prepared to taste, to take the best benediction? The Brahmin said, yes, sir. Lord Shiva has sent me to you for the best benediction. Then Sanatana Goswami asked him to throw the touchstone in the water nearby and then come back. The poor Brahmin did so, and when he returned, Sanatana Goswami initiated him with the Hare Krishna mantra. Thus, by the benediction of Lord Shiva, the Brahmin got the association of the best devotee of Lord Krishna, and was thus initiated in the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Up to now, there has been a big conflict between the Brahmins and the followers of Lord Shiva. Very violent conflict. Blood has been shed. Offenses have been committed. Curses and counter-curses. But now, having approached Lord Shiva, I think it was Lord Brahma who told them, you have to go to Lord Shiva and beg his forgiveness. The offense was committed against him by Daksha. And everybody who sided with Daksha is sharing the reaction for this offense. And the only way to get free from these reactions is to go and beg forgiveness from Lord Shiva. Fortunately, Lord Shiva is not hard to please. Prabhupada tells us he's called Ashutosha, very quickly satisfied. The verse uses the term Midush Tama, the most generous giver of benedictions. This is a Latin word. Benediction means to speak something nice or to give somebody a blessing as a benediction. So benediction is just a fancy Latin word for a blessing. The word me do shtama as tama suffix, it means the most generous. The most generous donor. It comes from the word me divan, generous. It's a very old word from the Vedas, from the Rig Veda. I looked in the dictionary. It's funny. The verb that it comes from means to urinate. I can't understand the connection exactly. If there's some Vedic scholar here who can explain how urinating turns into benediction, I don't know. Anyway, it's a great term of respect. And it's used especially to describe Lord Shiva. There are maybe many very generous givers of charity, but Lord Shiva deserves to be called the most generous charitable person. He's willing to give spiritual guidance to the most fallen living entities. The Brahmanas who insulted, headed by Bhrigu and others, Daksha and Bhrigu, who insulted Lord Shiva, they looked down on him because he had so many low-class followers, bhutas and pretas, ghosts and spirits who are the followers of Lord Shiva, degraded creatures, subhuman. And Lord Shiva gives the shelter to them and gives them some kind of practical spiritual guidance. And the Brahmins condemned Lord Shiva for this, that he has so many low-class followers. The Brahmins, these proud Brahmins, headed by Daksha and Bhrigu, would never be willing to accept such disciples. May we find that the influence of Daksha and Bhrigu has not died. In fact, it's very prevalent, especially in the Kali Yuga, that the Brahmins are very prejudiced and won't deal with low-class people. Certainly they won't deal with foreigners unless money is involved. But the most generous devotee will give his mercy undiscriminatingly, seeing everybody as a pure spirit soul. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted that this Gaudiya Vaishnav movement manifest its influence all over the world. Because he, deserving the title Prabhupada means that you more than anyone else understand the inner intention of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sotat Padantikam. This is our prayer to Srila Rupa Goswami. When will Srila Rupa Goswami give me shelter at his lotus feet? At the tips of his lotus feet. I don't even deserve to come directly under his lotus feet. Let me just approach the tips of his feet. Because he has established in this world the mission that embodies the most confidential inner intention of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And therefore, he got the title Rupa Goswami Prabhupada. He was the first Prabhupada in our line. Because he, more than any other devotee, of course you can also include Sarup Damodar and Sanatana Goswami. After them, Rupa Goswami, more than anyone else, understood the secret inner intentions, the inner personal plans of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is what entitles someone, a devotee, to be called Prabhupada. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was also called Prabhupada by his followers for the same reason. He understood the inner intention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would say that Lord Gauranga's moon is moving west, that it's not going to stay just over the sky of Bengal, that it's meant to cover the whole world. And he asked several of his disciples to initiate the preaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure message in the Western world. Srila Prabhupada was not the only disciple to receive that instruction. And some of the sannyasis of the Gaudiya Mutt and one or two brahmacharis helping them went to London, preached there for some years, from 1933 all the way up to 1937. There was some preaching going on in England. But the effect was not permanent and very, very, very much. Mainly because they also had this caste prejudice that they only went to preach to the aristocrats, mostly. Even though when they established a small Gaudiya Mutt in London, common people were also interested in coming to their programs, but they didn't pay much attention to the commoners. They weren't interested in making low-class devotees. They were trying to make the aristocrats into devotees and didn't really succeed. Lord Zetland, the Marquess of Zetland, was one of the most favorable friends of the Gaudiya Mutt mission in London. And he asked Bhaktisaranga Maharaj, "So, Swamiji, can you make me into a Brahmin?" And the answer was, "Yes, it can be done. You just have to give up meat-eating, intoxication, illicit sex." And the answer was, "Impossible. Totally impossible. This is our life. It cannot be given up." So the British had their prejudice that they were the best of the world, and that the Indians were just ignorant, degraded people and had nothing to offer England. So therefore, because of the prejudice on both sides, not much was accomplished. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted those of his disciples who had the qualification, especially who could preach in English and were well educated, to make this movement established all over the world. When Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Abhay Charan Dei, when he, Jai Shri Gauranitai, Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai, Shri Lalita Devi Vishaka Devi Radha Shamasundar Ki Jai. When Srila Prabhupada was induced by his friend Narind to come visit the Gaudiya Mission in Ultadanga, North Calcutta, in, I think, 1922, on one autumn evening, his friend dragged him there because Prabhupada was not very enthusiastic to go meet another sadhu. He had seen so many sadhus in his father's house and was not very impressed with them. Another sannyasi. I've seen so many sannyasis. But his friend made him go. And it was a mild autumn evening near sunset. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was enjoying the atmosphere on the roof with some of his disciples. So the two young educated men were invited to meet the guru on the roof. They went up and offered their obeisances to the sannyasi. And as soon as they took their heads off the floor, before any introductions or polite words, immediately Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati addressed the two and told them, "You are both educated young men. Why don't you go to the Western countries and preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English language?" Now he gave that order to both of them. We only know about one of them, how he fulfilled that mission. I don't know what Narin has done in all these years, whether he's still alive, probably not, and how he carried out that instruction. But if we know about how Abhay Charan Dei carried out that instruction. Because Prabhupada was able to inherited the title Prabhupada, because he was also empowered to understand the inner intention of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That Krishna consciousness doesn't belong to one race or nation. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord of the whole universe, Vishwambara. So Lord Shiva is also a great spiritual master of the whole world. And he especially gives his mercy to the most fallen and degraded. We see in the words that Lord Shiva spoke before this at the beginning of the chapter that he wasn't being diplomatic or flattering. He very frankly told the demigods and Brahmins who came to him that you're all like foolish children. I don't take seriously your insults and your quarrel any more than a father is disturbed by the bickering of his children. And he announced that offenses have been committed, therefore there has to be some retribution, and therefore Daksha can have his head back, but not the original head. He has to take the head of a goat. And Bhrigu's beard, which was ripped off, should also be replaced with the goat's beard. And Pusha, his teeth were knocked out. He'll have to spend the rest of the Manvantara chewing his food without any teeth, and so on. These are severe proclamations that Daksha, the very proud Prajapati, has to bear the humiliation of walking around with the head of a goat, and so on. And still everybody, because of the noble status of Lord Shiva, they're very glad even to accept these punishments. That's what's stated in this verse. All the personalities present were very much satisfied in heart and soul upon hearing the words of Lord Shiva. In this case, he wasn't handing out cheap benedictions. He was handing out humiliation and chastisement. But the demigods and sages, who are very elevated persons, were very pleased to get this chastisement from Lord Shiva. They understood that this is his real benediction. So we're also like foolish children trying to follow Srila Prabhupada. We have to realize that we're very faulty and not become proud of our brahminical status as Daksha was. We should avoid that, having to get our head replaced with a goat's head or some other retribution for our offenses. Better to avoid the offense of being proud and just remain humble servants of Srila Prabhupada and our own spiritual masters who are representing Srila Prabhupada, and try to become purified. Try to admit our faults and rectify them and become fit to be fully surrendered pure devotees of Sri Radha Krishna. And when our spiritual masters chastise us, we should be very satisfied that we're getting that mercy. That is the quality of a sincere disciple, is that he welcomes being chastised by the spiritual master, that he asks for that chastisement. So please purify me. Shodha hey Amar. Please do what is ever necessary, that I will be purified. Without becoming purified, we cannot really enter into the service of Radha and Krishna. We're standing before the deities. We're chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. But if we're offensive and arrogant or have other bad qualities, duplicity and so on, then we have a long way to go. We have purification to undergo so that we can actually become qualified. Anyway, what's required of us is to be faithful, honest, humble disciples of the disciple succession, take shelter, and try to be of use in the mission of Srila Prabhupada. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Roger, you mentioned Shiva easily becomes angry. And we know Lord Shiva is Vaishnava Nam Yatha Sambhu. Can you explain this?
How he very easily becomes angry.
At
yes.
the same time, he's a great Vaishnava.
He's a great Vaishnava, but each Vaishnava has his own individual personality. There are no hard and fast rules of how a Vaishnava will behave. Vaishnava Kriya Mudra Vigyeha Nabujai. Even the most learned scholar is puzzled in trying to understand the behavior of a Vaishnava. We may have our fixed idea that a sadhu shouldn't get angry. But where is that rule in the Shastra? Yeah, he should be equal poised. But even though he's not personally insulted or disturbed by the nonsense of the material world, when he takes responsibility to guide his disciples, it's his duty to correct them and to sometimes become angry at them and chastise them. That's just fulfilling his paternal duty to his disciples. So Lord Shiva gets angry because he's trying to guide living entities in the mode of ignorance mostly. And people in the mode of ignorance don't listen to good sense. You know, he's called Pashupati. The people who follow him are like dumb animals. And for an animal, the only logic is what Prabhupada calls argumentum ad baculum, argument from the stick. So that's appropriate. If a disciple is foolish, then he should be, the guru should become angry at him. Yeah.
It's not material angry, it's transcendental.
It's transcendental, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's not himself a victim of anger. He's using anger in his service to Krishna to guide his followers. Take
the mic. Because sometimes we get confused because many times we say Lord Shiva becomes very angry. So it is transcendental or it's material, because Vaishnava is like free of anger.
Maybe, but some Vaishnavas can get angry, and some Vaishnavas get angry a lot. That's their personality. Lord Shiva is very easily angered, but he's also very easily pleased. He's called Rudra. In the Rig Veda, there are prayers, and the Yajur Veda, prayers, Rudra Stuti. Please don't kill us. Don't get angry at us. This is how the devotees are praying to Lord Shiva, because they know he can get angry. He can destroy the whole universe if he gets angry. That's his personality. But he's still the greatest of Vaishnavas in the material world. Okay.
Yes. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you for the class.
Thank you.
Prabhuji, you told the word benediction.
Yes.
In the lecture. Okay, now I just want to ask that is blessing, which is benediction, and boon, one and the same thing?
What was the third one?
Blessing or benediction and boon, are both one and the same?
I think so. Boon. Well, no. A boon is that you're given... I see. Benediction is a blessing, but it doesn't mean that you're giving somebody something. Well, I guess it is. Benediction is you're wishing well for someone. May you become successful in Krishna consciousness. A boon is you get a choice, what you want. I offer you a boon. You know, you got three wishes. So there's some difference there. Boon means that you offer a choice to somebody, what he wants. Benediction is you're giving somebody something without asking them what they want. Okay. Benediction is more general, but a boon is more specific, that you offer someone a choice of what gift he wants. The Sanskrit word is vada. Vada means choice. So when you use the word vada, you really mean you're offering somebody a choice of benediction. But sometimes I'll tell you what the benediction is, I don't give you a choice. Yeah. So there's a difference. Okay. Yes, ma'am?
Prabhuji, in Parpat, you mentioned about Sanatan Goswami and Touchstone. So we also got the bhakti, but we doesn't understand the value, which is much more than the touchstone. Can you please explain on this? Means what obstructs us that to understand bhakti much more than the touchstone?
I'm sorry. I just don't get the point.
We have got the bhakti.
We have bhakti, yeah.
Yeah. Which the value of bhakti is much more than the touchstone.
Yes, and how?
But we are not able to understand the value of bhakti, which is much more than the touchstone.
Oh,
what obstructs
yes.
us?
That's why we're not being offered touchstones. We might choose the facility to make gold instead if we had a choice. Well, that's what we got to learn. This is our job, is to learn the value of bhakti. That it's more valuable than all the gold in the world. Are we really convinced of that yet? You know, some devotees, I think Giriraj Maharaj, his father offered him a large amount of money if he would quit the Hare Krishnas. And he didn't give in to the temptation. But what if your father offered you, you know, if he had it, 10 crores to give up Hare Krishna, would you do it? So, we have to learn the incomparable value of bhakti. We can learn it theoretically by reading about it and hearing about the testimony and the example of devotees who know the value. But eventually we're going to have to experience it ourselves to be fully convinced. We have to experience bhakti, pratyakshavagamam. You'll really know what it is when you experience it yourself. Then you'll know the value. So at least by chanting Hare Krishna for years and years, we eventually start getting a taste for it. We eventually get a real taste for serving Krishna and serving the Vaishnavas. And we start to appreciate that this service is more valuable than all the power and money in the world and all the sense gratification. If you're serving and chanting for decades, you should eventually be convinced of that. Even before fully tasting prema, at least you taste the value, the worth of devotional service. You have to do that by practicing, by chanting, by serving, and by continuing to do it sincerely. You eventually develop the taste and a sense of value. Okay? By practicing, by continuing to practice, is the only way. Okay. Anything else?
You're not going to get away so easy. We've all heard that Srila Prabhupada said devotional service in Vrindavan is multiplied 1,000 times.
Yes.
So, near the end of your class, you were speaking a little bit about purification and,
yes,
and offenses.
Yes.
Could you speak a little more about that in the context of being here in Vrindavan and living and 1,000 times?
Yeah, you don't have to make much special effort to get purified in Vrindavan. It will happen to you. Yeah. If you spent years here, you know, so many things happen. Yeah. Diseases and things, you know, you get gored by a cow, no matter, you know, so many things happen. So that's the manifestation of 1,000 times more effect. We get quickly purified. But you can also commit offenses more seriously. So if you're not going to be a serious devotee, if you're going to hang around for sense gratification, you're going to end up committing offenses and get a negative effect. Bhaktisiddhanta Vinod Thakur advised materialistic people not to spend more than 3 days in Vrindavan, because they'll commit offenses and get in trouble. So if you want to get the benefit of serving in Vrindavan and getting 1,000 times more effect, we have to be careful to avoid offenses and be serious about doing real service here. It's not a vacation home. It's not a place for sense gratification. Not a resort for just hanging around and enjoying.
Hare Krishna.
You
spoke about how Srila Prabhupada was so merciful to see everyone as a spirit soul and even initiate foreigners. Can you speak about how he also initiated women, and that was kind of a revolutionary step?
Yeah, he definitely did indiscriminately give his mercy and his guidance, you know, with no discrimination of gender either. Of course, Vaishnavas in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and other lines, they do also initiate women. Narada Muni established that although Vedic initiation is generally not given to women, the Pancharatrika system doesn't discriminate man or woman. Women can also receive the Pancharatrika mantras. So, and that tradition is recognized. So Prabhupada wasn't the first to initiate women, but he went further than that. Yeah. Recognizing the situation he had walked into in the Western world, he saw that even external signs of discrimination would not be acceptable, and that the women were well educated and as competent as their brothers. So he instituted such things as giving the women the Brahminical initiation, second initiation, which wasn't generally done before. Prabhupada established what is coeducational ashrams, you know, temples in which both men and women lived. That was also very unconventional. And engaged his lady disciples in preaching. This is still controversial in India, that women are also supposed to be preachers. But that was the way Prabhupada did things. He engaged even the women in preaching. So that was Prabhupada's program, and we're supposed to be still following Prabhupada's program. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Hare Bhav.
If you're here for any length of time and you actually commit an offence, not on purpose, how do you get rid of the effects without?
If I commit an offence on purpose.
No, not on purpose.
Anybody, yeah, I was saying, yeah, yeah. How to get rid of the effects. Well, first of all, you have to realize you're doing something wrong. If you think it's okay to act like that, then what can, you know, there's no hope. The only hope it comes to first recognize that I'm committing serious offense. I got to stop this. A sick person can be treated if he recognizes he's sick. Otherwise, the doctor can't help him. So first of all, I have to recognize that we're committing offense, it's wrong. Then there's hope. The injunctions are, as explained by our acharyas, and in the earlier scriptures, you have to go to the person who you're offending and get that person's forgiveness. Even if you go to the Supreme Lord, he won't be able to forgive you. You have to go to the person who you've offended. In the case that you don't know who you've offended, you said it intentionally, but if you don't know who you offended, then you should try to serve all the Vaishnavas, hoping that you also serve the person you offended. There's one story, I'm just repeating what everyone's heard several times, but Rupa Goswami committed an unintentional offense externally. He was meditating outside on the street, and he was meditating very deeply on some pastime of Radha and Krishna. Something was humorous that he was meditating on, and he laughed. He wasn't aware of what was going on externally, but just at the moment that he was laughing, an old sadhu walked in front of him, who was physically deformed. And that sadhu got the idea that Rupa Goswami was laughing at him and didn't feel good about it. Right after that, Rupa Goswami's meditation disappeared. It broke. And he was disturbed. What happened to my meditation? So he went to his elder brother, Sanatan, to consult. Sanatan Goswami, you said you must have committed an offense against some Vaishnava for this to have happened. Rupa Goswami asked, well, how do I find out who I've offended? I don't know. I wasn't aware of committing any offense. So Sanatana Goswami said, do this. You prepare a feast and invite all the neighboring sadhus to come. So Sanatana Goswami did what he was told, invited all the sadhus to the feast, and it seemed like everybody came. And then after that, Rupa Goswami asked his brother, okay, I did it, now what? So Sanatana Goswami said, well, just think, is there any local sadhu who didn't appear at the feast? And Rupa thought and said, yes, that old hunchback sadhu, that old man, he didn't come. So Sanatana said, that's the one you've offended. So you go to him and apologize. So in that case, using sharp intelligence, it was able, they could deduce who was offended. In the case that you don't know who you've offended, then you have to please everybody, try to please everybody. But without getting the satisfaction of the person you offended, there's no relief. Okay. All right. I think we should stop now. Okay, one last question back there.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, you said we should try to avoid being proud or try to avoid offenses. Like after we commit offense, as you said, all the steps are there. But how can you practically avoid being proud or avoid being offensive? Can you please elaborate, Prabhuji?
Well, the opposite of being proud is being humble. What helps being humble is to be honest with yourself and introspective. Look at yourself in the mirror and see your faults. When you actually see the real situation you're in, that helps you become humble. To be realistic and honest with yourself and introspective. If you're making a show, and a false show of being better than you are to everybody, including yourself, then you'll never be able to be humble. Okay? All right. So we'll stop. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.